Andrews, something I repeat, all happened and the motor came loose.
Who controls the past, controls the future. Who controls the present, controls the past.
The death of bin Laden marks the most significant achievement to date in our nation's effort to defeat al-Qaeda.
All you got to do is start looking around, start thinking for yourself, start investigating things, and you will see it all right there. So you have the power. Humanity has the power. We have the power. Do you want to fight? You better believe you got one!
Let us never tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories.
As for me, give me liberty or give me death!
The answer to 1984 is 1776.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the InfoWars Nightly News. I'm Darren McBreen. It is Friday, May 24th, 2013, and here's a quick look at what's coming up.
Tonight, while China destroys genetically modified corn produced in the U.S., the U.S. government attempts to jail a Wisconsin raw milk farmer for years. Are we living in an idiocracy? Mike Judge tells us what he thinks. All that and more on tonight's InfoWars Nightly News.
Well, it looks like a loophole in Barack Obama's health care plan makes it very attractive for U.S. employers to hire illegal immigrants, and this instead of hiring legal U.S. citizens. And if it's not fixed before the bill passes, millions of jobs across the country will be filled by illegal aliens. This is yet another incentive by the Obama administration to persuade foreigners to enter the country illegally. The floodgates are wide open. It's amnesty for all. And, you know, according to the immigration reform bill, any illegal immigrant who's been in the U.S. since on or before December 31st, 2011, may apply for provisional status. And within 13 years, they may be granted lawful permanent resident status. And during that 13-year time frame, the illegal immigrant must be employed by a U.S. employer and must be able to provide proof of employment. But wait a minute. I thought it was illegal. I thought it was against the law for a company to hire an illegal immigrant. I mean, you used to get in a lot of trouble for that sort of thing back in the day. But that was then. This is now. And this is now Obama's America. And now under Obamacare, you know, employers with more than 50 employees are required to either provide health care benefits or pay heavy fines for each worker. Now here's the catch. During that 13-year time frame, the illegal immigrant is not eligible for federal benefits, and that includes Obamacare. But this, the employer doesn't have to provide health insurance to the immigrant, so obviously they're going to save money by hiring illegal immigrants because they won't have to pay insurance. So there's your loophole, and it's a big one at that. We'll keep you posted as that story develops, but not to fear. Senator John McCain says that he is going to resolve the issue during the amendment process. Yeah, right. I'm not going to hold my breath. Hey, look out. It's airborne. Human transmission of the deadly H7N9 virus is now confirmed. In April of this year, researchers studying the H7N9 bird flu virus in China advised global governments to get prepared for the worst case scenario. According to the World Health Organization, H7N9 is one of the most lethal influenza strains ever, and it mutates 8 times faster than a normal flu virus with a death-to-infection ratio of about 25%. The Sun China Morning Post is reporting that researchers have confirmed that not only can the virus be transmitted from one human to another, but now it's gone airborne. And we know that pandemics have been responsible for the deaths of hundreds of millions of people throughout history. And once they start, they are very hard to control. Meanwhile, the threat exists right here in the United States that a deadly disease will escape one of the many biodefense labs scattered throughout the country. In fact, according to the CDC, there is a 70% chance that a deadly virus will eventually get out. Government-funded universities across the Western world are developing massive warehouses full of bioweapons that they say is for biodefense under the BioShield program. Airborne Ebola, smallpox, bubonic plague, bird flu, and the H1N1 superbug are being weaponized and kept in moderately secured facilities like at the Galveston National Laboratory on the campus of the University of Texas. Now, this may be one of the biggest threats we now face, as the risk of a deadly virus escaping one of these laboratories and starting a global pandemic, well, it is a clear and present danger.
Weaponized airborne Ebola, super weaponized viruses and bacteria that kill over 90%, 9 out of 10 people on your street dead.
The National Research Council, which is an arm of the National Academy of Sciences, released a report concerning potential hazardous risk associated with the new multi-million-dollar infectious disease research lab currently under construction in Kansas. It's located only 120 miles west of Kansas City. It's called the National Bio and Agro Defense Facility, and even though it's a level 4 bio lab, which is the highest secured rating issued by the CDC, the expert panel found that there is nearly a 70% chance that a disease will escape the laboratory during its planned 50-year operational lifespan. And it went on to say that the U.S. Department of Homeland Security has not adequately gauged the potential risk of a dangerous airborne pathogen escaping the compound.
There are bioweapons that are in unsecured, well, moderately secured environments, like in Galveston, Texas, and the CDC even went to one of these facilities in Kansas, and they're not as nearly as safe as they would hope. And they even said, the CDC even said, the one in Kansas has a 70% chance of some dangerous virus getting released.
I mean, what are the bylaws in keeping them safe? I don't think there's anything even designated to making sure that they're safe. It's that gray area of the world that nobody really thinks about, but is.
Yes. Like, so you think it's a clear and present danger that we should try to prepare for, or something like
I think,
that?
I think everybody should always be prepared for anything. You know, it's like hope for the best, prepare for the worst.
Can you imagine the awakening that's going to happen if they release those bioweapons? After we've warned people so much, God Almighty, I hope the next phases of what we've broken down don't happen. God Almighty, I hope they don't. But I know one thing. I'm sure selfish. I've sure gotten my family ready.
Do you think it's wise for people that collect food and they have stockpiles of food and stuff like that just in case of emergency and have a place to go just in case something like this were to happen?
I don't have anything stockpiled.
I'm all about having weapons. I'm all about getting as much ammunition as you can get in it, because everybody's going to get crazy. They're going to want to get their hands on whatever sources are available, food, water, natural resources, anything to keep the normalcy of life continuing.
That's why I'm out here on the streets. I want to, like, learn, like, some street smarts.
Self-survival.
And, like, if it goes down, then I want to be able to, like,
find your way around it.
Yeah.
No, let me tell you something. Once that something like that goes down, the people in the high-rise apartments and stuff, they're not going to know what to do. It's the people with street smarts are going to be the ones.
They won't be able to survive.
Just making sure that you have the resources that you need, because when the world gets chaotic, everybody loses their minds.
Let me put this in layman terms. A level 4 bioweapons lab should be 3 floors under the ground, barbed wire fences, minefields, and machine guns, and a system that if the super germs get out, they pull a lever, alarms go off, and the whole place goes up in flames. But instead, the global elite are storing it in level 2 facilities like the University of Texas at Galveston, behind a glass door with a swipe guard, right there in petri dishes. And they're doing this so that when they release it to massively reduce population, they can claim it was an accident.
All right, we're going to switch gears right now, and I want to talk about some interesting developments in the war on food as organic dairy farmers continue to be attacked by the federal government. And a raw milk farmer in Wisconsin is facing up to 30 months behind bars for offering raw milk and cheese to his friends and neighbors. That's right, folks. The federal government wants to criminalize organic dairy farmers. Criminal charges filed against Wisconsin dairy farmer Vernon Hershberger could land him behind bars for up to 30 months. The husband and father faces four separate charges stemming from providing raw dairy products to members of his Grazing Acres Food Club. These are basically people in the surrounding community who, well, they don't want processed or genetically modified foods, and they should have the right to choose, you know, to eat whatever they want. Funny how the government supports GMOs despite the well-documented health hazards, and they are, you know, they're putting GMO food in most of the nation's public school cafeterias. Meanwhile, if you're a parent, they're telling parents that you cannot pack school lunches for your own children. And now, you know, at the same time, they're putting the boot on the throat of organic farmers who simply want to provide organic products to their community. Unbelievable. And the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection is wasting tens of thousands of taxpayer dollars on the jury trial of a raw milk farmer. The government agency destroyed 2,000 pounds of his unpasteurized milk. He faces 30 months in jail, a $10,000 fine, and obviously would not be allowed to continue to provide his community with organic cheese and milk, as a growing number of citizens are choosing to opt out of the commercial food supply, and for good reason. One of the most important things about this trial is that it will set a precedent for how communities share food in the future.
They definitely have something to gain, because once they back Americans into the corner of not being able to create their own food, where do we go? How do we feed ourselves? If we're not creating it ourselves, we have to pay for it. It's very important that we maintain our rights and establish our freedoms to feed ourselves.
The only legitimate purpose of any government is to protect your life, your liberty, and your private property. And food, in particular, is absolutely crucial to life. So if the government is able to control all the food production and control all the water, then the government can generate compliance within the people by saying, you have to do what we want, or we will not give you the food and water that you need to survive.
And look, there is no justification for the attack on organic dairy farmers that's going on in America today. We have a God-given right as free Americans, free individuals, as humans, to choose whatever food we want to eat. And for that matter, whatever food we don't want to eat as well. And meanwhile, you know, they are continuing to push genetically modified foods upon us, but the people are waking up. More and more people are beginning to realize the dangers and health hazards associated with GMOs. And we've had enough, and we are rejecting it. In fact, tomorrow we are going to see one of the biggest unified global protests in history as activists around the world unite to march against Monsanto. There's the flyer right there. That's right. Saturday, May 25th is the March Against Monsanto at your state capitals and your local town halls. We're now joined by InfoWars reporter Leanne McAdoo, who will be at the Texas State Capitol tomorrow, joining forces with the good people of Austin, Texas, and, you know, sending a message to not only Monsanto, but the enablers of Monsanto. I'm talking the FDA. You know, what can we expect from the March Against Monsanto tomorrow?
Well, it's true. People all around the globe are fed up, and so 36 countries are holding this March Against Monsanto. Pretty much every state in America is going to be having their own rally. So tomorrow at Austin, I know about 4,000 people have RSVP'd to attend this event. It's going to be huge.
And aren't you going to be streaming live? from the event?
Yes. Actually, if you aren't able to make it to the event, I will be streaming live on Ustream at the Alex Jones Live channel. And I'm going to be dressed as my favorite Frankenfood.
Which is what? Is that like a cross, like a salmon and a banana?
Yeah, or? I'm definitely probably going to go with a banana fish.
A banana fish.
Yeah.
Ah, all right. Well, that sounds good. Well, look, there's definitely a revolving door when it comes to like the FDA, which is supposed to make, you know, our food safer. It is supposed to be safer for the population, but it is controlled by ex-Monsanto executives.
Exactly.
So we want to get that word out to everyone as well. I understand how many, you said there's like 4,000 people that have already reserved. All right. So look it up, folks. Okay. It's the March Against Monsanto. What's the website?
Well, you can go to, it's probably easier to Google March Against Monsanto, and then it'll pull right up. There is an entire page there that shows all of the countries, all of the states that you can go to.
So in the United States, it's probably going to be at either the local town halls or the state capitals, correct?
Exactly. Wherever we can, you know, have the voices be heard by the people high up, you know.
Okay.
And we're letting them know we're coming for them.
Well, there's a good chance that it'll be in your neighborhood and or at your local town hall, so definitely look it up. There's also a good chance that the listeners out there, the people watching this, they probably ate something today that was contaminated by chemicals or Monsanto food or GMOs that wasn't labeled.
Exactly.
So they have a reason to be pissed off, and they should get out there and support this.
Exactly.
All right, thanks, Leanne. I'll probably join you tomorrow. And, you know, Monsanto wants to totally monopolize the entire food chain. So it is very important that we all band together and stand against them, march against the Monsanto Corporation tomorrow. Please join us. Now, that's going to do it for the first half of our show. Up next, the exclusive interview with Mike Judge. Alex Jones was invited with the crew to Mike Judge's house recently. And, you know, Mike Judge, he's the creator of Beavis and Butthead. He also does the voices for Beavis and Butthead, King of the Hill, Office Space, and the prophetic Idiocracy. And, well, that's coming up next. And I also want to add that he does a pretty damn good impersonation of Alex Jones as well. Mike Judge, up next on the InfoWars Nightly News.
The important thing about the Pro One filter today is that the material we use for removing fluoride and other heavy metals now will remove the latest form of fluoride called hydrofluorosilicic acid. There's no other fluoride reduction filter out there that will remove that type of fluoride. And it's extremely important because today we're hearing more and more cities are using that form of fluoride.
We've been having medication forced on us through the water system for quite a while. Most people don't realize it. Most people don't realize the negative effects of fluoride.
There's a wide range of health effects that are attributed to fluoride.
Bottom line, why should somebody get this new Pro One ProPure filter?
The reason to buy the Pro One, it's an all-in-one filter. It's convenient, easy to use. It doesn't require the add-on fluoride filter. And in addition, this filter removes the latest form of fluoride called hydrofluorosilicic acid.
I'm Darren McBreen, and these are some of the new items that are available now at InfoWarsShop.com.
Alert the public to Obama's blatant abuse of power with the new Obama t-shirt. Obama's Joker face on the front and come and take it on the back. It's time to publicly call him out for what he is, a tyrant. Defend the Second Amendment with our top seller come and take it t-shirts. And look at that, women's cut tank tops and t-shirts now available. Nice hat. Plus, the Don't Tread on Me flag. And now you can become a micro distributor of the InfoWars magazine. Plus, get your own copy delivered right to your door each and every month. And if you're tired like I am of you and your family being exposed to polluted drinking water, get the Pro One High Performance Water Filter. It gets rid of all pathogenic bacteria, cysts, fluoride, heavy metals, and numerous other contaminants.
So join the revolution at InfoWarsShop.com.
Harvard.
Harvard researchers have found children who live in high fluoride areas have significantly lower IQs.
Enjoy your extra big-ass fries.
Hello, this is Hank Hill. And I'm telling you what, you need to listen to Alex Jones.
Researchers found members of Congress, on average, speak at a 10th grade level. Most Americans read at an 8th or 9th grade level.
Look, now I'll talk slow so you can understand me.
It was just a few thousand years ago that our ancestors were using primitive grunts to communicate.
Internal investigation that shows the agency targeted the Tea Party and conservative groups.
That does scare me. I think I'm just going to make sure to not use the words Tea Party or Constitution in any of my work.
All right. Who are you? CIA? FBI? ATF?
While gun ownership is at an all-time high, crime is down.
No one will be able to be armed. We will take all weapons.
The Alex Jones Show. Because there is a war on for your mind.
Hitler took the guns. Stalin took the guns. Mao took the guns.
Fidel Castro took the guns.
Dominique.
Hugo Chavez took the guns.
And if you try to take our guns,
1776 will commence again. If you try to take our firearms.
The answer to 1984 is 1776.
Yeah, yeah. Infowars.com. Yeah. Hey.
Judge, what is the secret of the universe?
The secret of the universe, damn. That's a good one to start with. Breakfast tacos.
Well, I'm counting 37 health violations.
I don't have an answer. I'd wanted to go into comedy for a long time, like sketch comedy and stuff, because I always did imitations and things like that. But anytime I'd try to pair up with someone, because you need other people to do that. You can't do that by yourself. And I had a friend in high school, just like brilliant, like funny guy. And I'd go, okay, just do that imitation of James Sanchez that you do. And we'll do, and he's like, oh, but no one knows who he is. And I was like, it doesn't matter. It's funny, you know? And so, yeah, I was trying to do stuff that would just, like, make my friends laugh, making, like, my brother laugh, my friend, that kind of stuff is how I was thinking of it. And I always had a hunch that that would work. And then,
do you think you influenced South Park?
I think so. I mean, Trey and Matt have said that, and they've been really nice about that. I mean, I think that's just genius, all the stuff they do, you know?
Stupid Toilet Safety Administration.
Shoes off, belts off, sharp objects go in the plastic tray. This is inhumane. Shut up, sir.
I wanted to do animation since I was a little kid. I mean, I didn't think of it as a career so much as just something, because that wasn't ever described as, I mean, my mom especially, it was all about, you know, science. That's where it's at. I was kind of good at math and science, so. But animation was my burning desire. I actually kind of hit a fork in the road when I was, I don't remember how old I was. I'd saved up money from a summer job, and I had a paper out, and I was going to either buy a 16-millimeter camera that's single-framed, or I was going to buy, then I decided, okay, I could buy a bass, an electric bass. And then I started looking at the price of film, and I was like, you know what, that's just not possible, and the bass was going to give me a social life if I could be in a band or something, so.
Dun, 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 dun.
Then I didn't start doing animation until I was like 26, really, so. And when I just got the idea to do animation, which I'd wanted to do, but I never thought of doing as a way to get into comedy, then I thought, well, this is great. I can do this all myself. I don't need to, you know, convince a bunch of people to get in front of a camera and do this and that. I can just do the whole thing on my own, so.
I work for a living, and I mean real work, not writing down gobbledygook.
I have a hard time saying I'm either a Democrat or a Republican. It just doesn't feel good. I was definitely raised, my parents were very liberal. Then, I don't know, certain things started to, you know, I mean, for a lot of people, that's kind of almost a religion to them. And right-wing stuff is too, you know, so I try to not be part of any of that. I suppose I've become a, interested in, you know, smaller government kind of thinking. That sort of happens when, you know, I think you know, when you build your own thing, when you do your own thing, and then suddenly you're getting penalized left and right, you know, that kind of can change you.
If you got a business, that you didn't build that. Somebody else made that happen.
I don't ever want to be one of those people that uses my whatever fame or whatever level of that notoriety I have from what I do in comedy to try to go into politics. I don't feel like I'm qualified. It kind of bugs me when people in Hollywood will use that, you know, their audience that they've gained through that to try to put out a political message, and they have no idea what they're talking about. King of the Hill, Hank was definitely, you know, I saw as sort of a, I don't know, like populist kind of, like, you know, a guy who's like just trying to do his thing, and just all these government and all these other weird things of the modern world are, that was always the fun of it, is just all these things just kind of poking at him, you know.
I live in the real world where men sell propane and propane accessories.
I remember popping in a VHS when Alex Jones was on cable access. It was you and two other guys, and somewhere I can't find it anymore, but I think I labeled the tape Three Dales. You were kind of the more rational one, and then the other two guys were just like, I don't know. I wish I could find that tape, but King of the Hill started with a drawing of the four guys that I'd done. I was kind of like dabbling in doing panel cartoons, which I never really did at all. I went straight into animation. I didn't draw comic books or anything. And so I had the four guys, and Dale, something about the way he looked. Originally, I had his hat say Smith and Wesson, the first drawing I ever did. I just put that on there. I don't know why, just the way he looked. And I'd done a first draft of the pilot, and then Greg Daniels got involved. And at some point, you know, we had this thing where his wife is, you know, getting it on with this Native American healer, and clearly his kid's not his. But so we had this idea about that he's just, you know, it's almost probably a subconscious thing. He's like, he's into every conspiracy except the one that's going on in his own house.
Nice work, John Redcorn. She didn't suspect a thing.
It's almost like his escape, you know, or something. I mean, if I never psychoanalyzed it that much, but that, I kind of feel like that's what that character was about. So he was almost like looking for conspiracies, you know, kind of. And some of them might have something to him. Some of them are crazy.
I have read a book. Now, who do you believe, me or Hank?
I know Hank more believable.
Dale is kind of one of the ones that, you know, probably gives you guys a bad name. Johnny Hardwick, who does the voice, I don't know, you may even know him. He had a few, like, he had a few kooky theories of his own, and sometimes we would work those in. I mean, there's one line he said that he's talking about something, and it ended with him saying something that they're doing, and corn is next.
A French study that was just released finds rats that are fed genetically engineered corn suffered from tumors and severe organ damage.
This is the first study that's looking at the effects on rats of eating genetically modified foods over their lifetimes. They gave the rats the genetically modified corn. They gave them the genetically modified corn with the herbicide that the corn is used with.
On Dale, I had to do some convincing to get them to let Johnny Hardwick do the voice. I mean, he wasn't anybody famous at all. He was one of the people we hired as a writer. But it just sounded right to me. Ended up being my favorite character, really, on the show as far as, well, just for a while, you know, as far as the voice and the drawing clicking. But, I mean, they had all kinds of celebrities they were pitching. It hardly ever works when you just get, like, oh, let's get this famous person and this person to draw it, and then you have something that just doesn't make sense, which is why a lot of shows fail.
Squirrel tactic!
Okay, I grew up in Albuquerque, New Mexico, which definitely influenced a lot of what I do, because Beavis and Butthead, to me, is kind of set in a sort of, like, eastern New Mexico, west Texas type environment, you know, where everything is just sort of, people are bored, teenagers are bored, and there's like, it's nothing to do, it's hot, it's kind of a recipe for disaster, and so that was definitely an influence on Beavis and Butthead. Although, you know, I don't think I've ever told this story, but so my grandfather on my mom's side lived with us, and he died when I was, I think, in junior high, and like 76, whatever. And he, we found out he had a 16 millimeter Bolex camera that was there, and I was like, wow, okay, there's a camera in this house. And so I waited like a good 2 or 3 months before I, you know, after he passed away, to say, hey, could I borrow granddad's camera maybe? And she said, no. And then, like, I waited another 6 months, and no. Waited like a year, no. So I thought, well, okay, maybe I'm just going to buy one. And then I looked into how much they cost and just couldn't pull it together. Years later, when I was, like I said, like 26, and I got the idea again to try doing animation, I ended up buying the same exact camera, because it turns out that's the perfect camera to single frame and shoot animation on. And finished my first animated short, first couple, ended up getting them on like Comedy Central and stuff. Sent a tape to my mom, and she said, oh, that's interesting. You know, you probably don't remember your grandfather had a Bolex camera. I'll see if I can find it. Like, no, I remember. I was like drooling over the idea of just being able to get my hands on it, you know, but it all worked out. But yeah, it was kind of, in a way, it was probably good, because it kind of, by the time I was able to actually do it, I was just, it had been a fantasy. It sounds weird, but it was like a fantasy of mine for so long to do animation. And so when I finally did, I mean, I didn't take it for granted when I had the opportunity to do it. So probably was a good thing, actually.
Y'all got that in there? Large fries, pie, large coffee?
Like Beavis and Butthead, I'll get asked a lot if that's based on anybody specific, and it's not. It's not like that was that person, that was that person. It's just started out as drawings, and then, but definitely, like, there's little bits and pieces from all kinds of people in there, you know.
Well, I was like that when I was drawing.
A lot of us were, yeah. I mean, it's a little bit of his, like, me and my brother, but not, I mean, we weren't, you know, we got good grades, and we were, but some of these people are really intelligent too. There's a guy who's now, he's now a professor, I won't say his name, but he's one of these guys, like, I would see him in the hallway. I think this is, the laugh, I don't even know, the laugh came from, I had just written down, ha ha ha, it started out as a storyboard. It was the first time I'd animated something where usually I would start with the voice and then do the drawing. This one I started with a drawing, and I didn't know what they would sound like. And I just drawn ha 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 on there. Years later, I realized there's a Mimi Pond cartoon that, and I've become friends with her on Facebook now, but where she had a guy going, a weirdo on a bus doing that. And I think that might have been in the back of my head, but I started doing that laugh, and I was kind of like going like, this is reminding me of something. Didn't think about it till probably 2 years into the show that there was a guy at my high school who would just, he was, really smart, stoned all the time, but he would just, you'd see him in the hallway, and I would always see him when the hallway was empty, and he'd just start like, he's one of these guys that he'd start going, hey, Mike. He just always had this laugh. It was different than Butthead laugh, but it was that thing of just kind of, how's it going? And so when I would do the voice, I would just kind of do the, and I would be doing it sort of to get into character, to get the voice sounding right. And then I'd go, well, that kind of sounds funny that he's just laughing all the time anyway. And then I realized later it was probably in the back of my head because of this guy who used to just kind of talk like that. But there's a lot of that, little bits and pieces of people. There's the Beavis laugh. There was a guy who was actually in calculus class, and he was a really smart guy. He's now a nuclear engineer. Hope he doesn't figure out who he is that I'm talking about him. But he kind of was always like, We had a hot teacher, which was unheard of back then. She was a former Dallas Cowboys cheerleader. Anyway, he would get really excited, and he was biting his lip all the time and just kind of going like, like laughing at everything she said. So I started out Beavis doing the spastic laugh like that, and then around season two, I started getting like where I don't even know if I can do it now. I'd get into the higher register. I'd get into this like kind of higher register of like where he's like kind of going. I have to warm up to it, but I started out with that laugh, and then I just kind of made his voice sound like the laugh, just like raspy, you know. The animated shows that have really taken off are when somebody, it's usually the person who's animating it doing the voice, which is other than The Simpsons, but I mean The Simpsons, the voices and the characters just match. They're really well done. But like, you know, you look at like Family Guy or South Park or Ren and Stimpy, it's like, you know, somewhere in those guys' heads, it's like it makes sense. That voice, those voices sound like they come out of those characters. And I think that clicks on Beavis and Butthead too, especially. Now I'd say Beavis and Butthead probably. That's probably the thing I'm most proud of. I think probably the best thing I've done. There were moments of making Office Space where I thought this is like the what I was born to do, but then I think it's probably Beavis and Butthead. I mean, King of the Hill probably overall is overall the best thing I've done, but Beavis and Butthead, like, some of it, there's about a third of it that's not that great because we were cranking them out so fast at the beginning of that show. I mean, it was just like MTV just going as many of them as you can make. It's on every day. There's no quality control. They didn't know how to produce a show. Nobody did. It was a train wreck. But so I ended up, the episodes I liked, I ended up spending all my time on. And those ones I think are great. That's probably the best stuff I've done. But, and the new Beavis and Buttheads I think are as good or better than a lot of the old ones. But, King of the Hill overall is probably like a, good, more, less spotty, like just, you know, good quality, consistent.
Now it's extinct.
You know, I grew up very liberal parents, like, thinking gun control is the way to go. You know, it's that Michael Moore movie, that was Bowling for Columbine, kind of actually made me go the other, made me think like, I mean, he's not trying to, that's not the effect he wanted, I don't think, but he's like kind of, that movie kind of makes you think, no, gun control is a bad idea. I mean, to me, if you look at it, like, I don't think that's what he's trying to do at all, but like, he mentions Canada in there, and he says, you know, there's lower crime there, and same people own guns, and I don't know. I own guns. I think if you look at it statistically, you actually are safer.
I got me a couple AKs, some sawed-offs, 25 9mm, and a couple of ground-to-airs. I got a fort up in the hills, virtually impenetrable, and enough supplies to outlast a 30-year standoff.
I know this because, okay, so 1993, Beavis and Butthead, the series, came out, and gun crimes have gone down since since Beavis and Butthead came out. What's interesting is that nobody talks about, no one wants statistics. I actually took graduate probability and statistics classes. That was what, I was going to become a math teacher before all this Beavis stuff happened. But, when I was getting blamed for all this, like, downfall of youth, that whole time, crime was going down in almost every category from the time, if you really wanted to make a correlation, you could say Beavis and Butthead is saving the world, but that's stupid. That really doesn't make any sense, but it makes more sense than saying this particular thing happened and this particular thing happened, you know, but really, like, statistically, there's no correlation.
All right. Who are you? CIA? FBI? ATF?
Yeah, there's that map where it's just like almost county by county where gun control, it's not doing any good. It's like there's higher crime rates where there's gun control, lower where there isn't. I mean, it's just like county by county. I mean, you can't, I think because I have this science background, I just you look at that and you go, you know, it's kind of ridiculous. As much as, you know, those bumper stickers might have been run into the ground, I mean, it's true. It's like, I would be all for it if it was effective, but it's, I haven't seen anything that shows it's effective, you know.
Well, Mao said political power grows out of the barrel of a gun. What does Hank Hill say about about disarming people?
It is the right of all Americans, as Cotton has taught me, to own a gun. Even though I'm not so good at shooting them.
A Japanese machine gun blew my shins off in WW2.
I loved it. It's good to see somebody yelling at Piers Morgan.
You listen, accuse me of attacking the Second Amendment of the Constitution.
I want to get people off pills that the insert says will make you commit suicide and kill people.
Alex, let's get them up to the Second Amendment.
I want to blame the real culprit.
Alex.
Suicide pills.
Alex.
Mass murder pills.
Okay, let me ask you one question.
It was interesting, though, the way it seemed to be spun on all these websites. There's all these websites now that have a bunch of hipsters on them who will just kind of play a clip and grin and chuckle about it. And that's how I saw it. I can't remember what it was on. I was thinking, hey, right on, Alex, go for it. Well, and everything you were saying was true, too. I mean, the clip that I saw.
Yeah, you were talking about Hitler took the guns. Stalin took the guns. Mao took the guns. Fidel. And if you try to take our guns, 1776 will commence again. If you try to take our firearms, doesn't matter how many lemmings you get out there on the street begging for them to have their guns taken. We will not relinquish them. Do you understand?
Something like that. Okay, I used to do you really well. I can't, like, it was the, what was the water filter commercial you used to do? Or it's been a while. You think I'd have it down now, though. I was just, like, hanging out with you last night.
Look at these headlines. IRS targeted Tea Party groups for scrutiny, searching words like patriot, Tea Party.
That does scare me. I think I'm just going to make sure to not use the words Tea Party or Constitution in any of my work.
That's pretty evil.
I won't, they're calling it the constitutional restrictions or whatever they referred to it as. Yeah, no, that was, that actually is scary. That's going to make me listen to some more Alex Jones.
Come on, I want to see it.
Yeah, come on, Stuart, do it.
Well, if I was to get heavy and deep on it, I think the one thing that's made me tick or makes me, I mean, other than just wanting to try to be funny, it tends to be, I don't overanalyze, but then, you know, when you do this long enough, you do analyze. I think what it is probably, I think a lot of us are just kind of out of sync with the way the world is right now, you know, like the way the modern world, we're not prepared for it all the time. And there's a lot of stuff that's messed up about it. And I think that's where a lot of my comedy comes from. It's like things that, you know, anything from being stuck in a cubicle to being stuck in classrooms that you don't belong in, those kind of things. I think that I get a lot of material out of that.
I gotta get out of here. I think I'm gonna lose it.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the mundus.
When I started doing animation, I wasn't trying to get rich. I wasn't trying to get, I mean, it did not seem like I could get rich off that. I thought, it's just like a desire to just express something that's hard to describe. And if I could describe it, I would probably be more of just a flat-out writer or something like that. And so a lot of the stuff is like, you know, it's always very hard to describe Beavis and Butthead to people who just ask if they haven't seen it. I never set out to say I'm going to be a satirist, but that's definitely what, I mean, I've always, the very first thing I animated was the
a cartoon called Office Space. It was before Dilbert, and it was like Milton at his cubicle and the boss, and I wanted to do just a series of office characters because, you know, when I grew up, it was a little, like, I'm 50, so, like, an office job was considered a good job. Like, it's like, oh, good, you don't have to work construction, okay? And then when I first got in an office, I had a temp job before I was an engineer, and I was just, like, going, God, this is torture. I mean, there's a woman answering the phone the same way next to me all day long. I'm alphabetizing in my sleep. I'm just like...
Corporate accounts payable, Nina speaking. Just a moment. Corporate accounts payable, Nina speaking. Just a moment.
And then that kind of sick feeling of like, oh, all these years of thinking this is a good job and this is what it is. Oh, my God, what's going to happen to me, you know?
Next Friday is Hawaiian Shirt Day. So, you know, if you want to, go ahead and
wear. Especially back then when I started out, a lot of what Hollywood was putting out just was really not in touch with the way most Americans feel. It was very like coming from, I mean, most people in Hollywood, honestly, that I mean, still are like from pretty wealthy families usually and don't seem to have ever had to really, you know, come up from the bottom and struggle. I think it's still that way. But I think a lot of it was like when I started doing this stuff, you know, about cubicle life was like just to kind of say, hey, has anyone else felt like this when they're stuck in a cubicle, you know? And has anyone else noticed that sometimes teenagers look really deranged and stupid? You know, it's that kind of thing of like wanting to kind of point something out that maybe no one else has pointed out. That's a lot of it, I think. When I did that first Office Space cartoon, which was just a 2-minute homemade crappy little short, I mailed out VHS tapes of that, just called information, and I got so many calls, and I think a lot of people saw it as something very fresh and different, you know.
I used to have my own stapler too, and then when I moved back, they made me give back my stapler. But Bill told me I'm supposed to have a stapler, so until I'm told different, I'm just going to take a stapler. And if they make me give it back, I'll set the building on fire.
Oh, hello, Milton. What's happening? I'm going to need you to go ahead and move your desk again. So if you could go ahead and just get it as far back into that corner as possible, that'd be terrific.
So Idiocracy, I had the idea for it. Actually, when I was writing the Beavis and Butthead movie, it was just kind of the seed of the idea. When I was thinking about just the way evolution works and thinking like, well, wait, there's no predators now. So it started with that, but then I was actually in line with my daughters, I think it was in 2001, at Disneyland at the Teacups ride. And, you know, it was in the summer, and my daughters were little at the time. And along comes a woman, like, there's a woman behind me who had an altercation with this other woman. And they both have their kids in strollers, and they just start going off. Kick your ass. And I'm like, my kids, and like thinking this isn't what Disney had in mind, you know. And this was in 2001, so it was the summer right before September 11th. So I was also thinking, you know, what if the movie 2001, instead of being this, you know, the monolith and everything being pristine and advanced, what if it was like the Jerry Springer Show and giant Walmarts? What if that had been that movie 2001? So I kind of was thinking like, just take that chart from when that was made to now and project it out and just, like, see where that would go. And
the years passed, and mankind became stupider at a frightening rate.
So Fox, I still owed them... Part of my overall deal was to write 2 movies for them, so I'd done Office Space. And in order to do something else for anybody else, I needed to burn that one off. And I kind of thought no one would make it. I thought it'd just be fun to write. I'd just start from there, you know. This was like, it was making me laugh. I just, after the Disneyland experience, I just started writing stuff down and ended up co-writing, getting someone to work with me, this guy, Eitan Cohen, and we got through a first draft pretty quickly and gave it to Fox, and then no one kind of wanted to make it, and I was like, well, okay, well, wasn't going to be huge budget, but it was going to be something. It was going to cost, you know, $23 million or something. And it just sat there, and I'm trying to remember how... And then Luke Wilson wanted to do it, and I was like, okay. Then I started to see it again. Then I went back and rewrote it kind of with him in mind and just rewrote it because it needed to be better anyway. And we had in the script this whole thing about the Starbucks. Because I remember actually driving on I-35. It was like something tan. It was a tanning salon. It said exotic tan for men. And I had no idea that tanning salons had turned into, you know, hand job places or whatever it was. And so I was just talking to friends of mine and going, wow, I wonder what's next. I mean, is it going to be like Starbucks or what? And so we had that in the script. And when it was in pre-production, I was, you know, and they run it by legal, and I'm going, man, I don't know how I'm going to come up with something better than the Starbucks thing. Because it's not funny if it's not a known place, you know. And so legal, an interesting thing happened. I mean, I don't know how this happened. But they said, they said no. And then they said, well, you know, I just said, so what, can it be satire? And they said, well, what would help us is if you didn't just pick on them, if it was a bunch of companies. And I was like, okay. So then that's how we ended up with that whole red light district in there in the movie where it's like, I think it's like H&R Block, adult tax return with release. And like, there's like a Pollo Loco or Pollo Borracho adult chicken. I don't know. and then we just did everything. Costco, I don't know what happened. At some point, I'm sure somebody got really flipped out, but I was shielded from all that. A similar thing happened on Office Space, but Idiocracy, I've been getting so much love for it, like, in the last 2 years.
What you're saying is that you want us to put water on the crops.
Yes.
Water. Like, out the toilet?
Well, I mean, it doesn't have to be out of the toilet, but yeah, that's the idea.
Yeah, I think a lot of the stuff that's in there maybe is starting to happen, you know, now instead of 500 years from now when it's set.
And that's Secretary of Education.
It's kind of stupid when he's President Camacho's stepbrother. Still does a pretty good job, eh?
It was supposed to take place during a drought. It was the rainiest summer ever in Austin. We were just having to kill grass everywhere in the background. But they didn't really give it a release. There was a contractual obligation. They had to put it in like 12 theaters, and that's all they did, I think. In fact, if you called Movie Phone, they didn't even, it was listed under Untitled Mike Judge Project. They didn't even bother. It went straight from what it was on the contract to Movie Phone. They didn't even put Idiocracy in there.
Dwayne Elizondo Camacho, five-time Ultimate SmackDown champion, porn superstar, and president of the United States, had called a special summit with the smartest man in the world.
So you smart, huh?
No.
I thought your hair would be bigger. Could look like a peanut. Let's get you sworn in.
Well, I do know what they told me, which, and I finished the movie long, at least like, I want to say like 9 months before it came out. It was in the can. I'd finished the mix. I'd turned the whole thing in. What they told me was it didn't test very well, which a lot of movies don't. You know, Office Space didn't.
Whoa. I think I just figured something out, Beavis.
What?
The fuck?
Yeah, me. It really sucks. Me.
This sucks more than anything that has ever sucked before.
The way movie testing works, they have these sheets, and it says excellent, very good, fair, and poor. For it to count at all, it has to be excellent or very good, I think. So if they say good, that's just a zero for you. So a lot of people, if it's a weird movie, they'll go, oh, it was good. They won't say very good. You know, so we would get like a 70% very good and excellent, which sounds, that's considered a horrible score.
I'm fixing to commensurate this trial here. We gonna see if we can't come up with a verdict up in here. Now,
why you think you done it?
Okay, number one, Your Honor. Just look at him.
He talks like a fine, too.
And B, we've got all this, like, evidence.
This is what I remember. They said, look, you know, it didn't test well. We can't. They made some horrible trailers for it, and I was glad they didn't put those out because they weren't gonna. They weren't very good. And then they just said, you know, look, we don't want to spend a lot of money promoting it, and they dumped the movie. But I mean, they said.
Why do you think that is?
When it came out, it got a lot. Maybe they were doing something right because it got a lot of attention. I didn't do any press for it. I ended up getting my picture in Time magazine without ever doing an interview because they were doing stories about, like, what's up with this movie? Why, you know, why are they putting it out in 12 theaters and not talking about it, not putting a title on it? And so it ended up getting some press. People liked it. But it's interesting. Like, now, I mean, it's become the term idiocracy has become. There was a guy in the LA Times who wrote an article like a year ago about and cited all the other articles that it's in, and I don't know, maybe just since it came out in 2006, everyone's gotten stupider. And
but Brando's got what plants crave.
It's got electrolytes.
Visit Infowars.com and PrisonPlanet.com. When you're on the site, you can also tune in 24 hours a day to my daily radio broadcast. There's also a free iPhone app to listen to the syndicated radio show when and where you want.